Now, he's just taking his coat off as he walks into the studio. No tattoos, Sammy Wilson?
No tattoos, but getting ready for you, Stephen.
Why no tattoos?
No reason.
If you had a tattoo, what would it be if you had to choose a tattoo?
I haven't a clue. I'm such a coward, I couldn't get a tattoo because, see, once I brought the needle near me, I'd probably faint. So that's as good a reason as any for not having one.
You're not a tough man, then?
Certainly not. Not when it comes to needles, surgical things. No, I'm a softie.
Right. This manifesto that we're having a look through today. It's an important time for politics, isn't it, in the whole of the UK?
Very important time, and indeed for Northern Ireland. This election could perhaps be one of the most important elections that we have ever had because, you know, very often with Westminster elections, we tend to be on the fringes. If the government has a majority of 60, 70, 80, then Northern Ireland doesn't feature and Northern Ireland politicians won't feature all that much. But of course, the pundits, and even this morning, the pundits are saying this will be definitely be a hung parliament. There could be very few votes between a Labour government being formed and a Conservative government being formed. That puts Northern Ireland in an important position. And of course, the point that we have been making is that we're the only party which can obtain a substantial number of seats, and there'll be blocks of seats that parties will be looking at, and therefore we should be in a position to influence things. One of the reasons why we have prepared for that by saying not only do we believe there's going to be a hung parliament, but here is the plan that we would have for Northern Ireland to try and maximise a benefit from that.
So you're going to hold the government across the water, the party across the water, to ransom?
No, we're not going to hold them to ransom. But what we are going to do is we're going to fight and hard for Northern Ireland. Every MP will do that for their constituents, whether as individuals. Every party will do that for the people that they represent. And I don't think that the people of Northern Ireland would expect us to do any less for them.
You don't have very many red lines, do you?
What we have is
you're talking about over there, because Clegg's coming out with lots of his red lines now to get his support. Why don't you have more red lines if you're going to fight for Northern Ireland?
Well, we've got a menu of things which we believe are important for Northern Ireland. That menu we have detailed to the electorate. And, you know, we also, I mean, we're realistic as well, Stephen, in that we know that as one of the smaller parties, we are going to have to negotiate with the bigger parties. We have limits to a certain extent the influence we're going to have, but we believe that rather than laying down red lines, we will be saying to parties, here are the things which are important to people in Northern Ireland. Now let's see who can offer us the best deal.
Yeah, but you know, if you're as powerful as you say that you are, then you could walk over there and you could say, we want this, you're not getting our support, full stop. These are our red lines, and we're telling you up front so people know whether to vote for you or not. For example, in this traditions and identity, very, very important to people in Northern Ireland, look at this. The Union flag should be displayed on an all-year-round basis from key public buildings throughout the UK. Now, that's in your manifesto. So walk over to Cameron Miliband and say, we don't get it, you're not getting our support, and put the flag on every building in Northern Ireland forever.
Well, first of all, that's
a red line.
That's the position in other parts of the United Kingdom.
It's not here.
And we would be arguing that that should be the position in Northern Ireland. And of course, it would do away with a lot of the other flags controversy. So there are benefits in that.
But is it a red line?
No.
Would you insist? Is the Union flag not important to you?
And I've said to you, Stephen, that we have not set down red lines. We have set down a menu of things, some of which will be attainable, some of which will not be attainable, some of which, depending on how important our vote will be at certain times to the government, whether they're prepared to give concessions on it. But, you know, I think, even look at the last Parliament, when the Liberal Democrats had 70 members of Parliament, there were lots of things which they dearly wanted, and indeed which they had campaigned on, such as university fees, that they weren't able to get out of a coalition.
Obtainable and some of it isn't obtainable, obviously that's the case.
I don't know what will be the case.
I know,
until
so nobody knows what they're voting for here in this manifesto, because they don't know what they're going to get.
They know the things that we will be pressing the government on.
You're pressing them for everything, but you might get nothing.
We'll get something, because if they want our support, we will get concessions from that. It would be foolish for us to say, here are things ahead of negotiations, before we even know, one, what strength we have, two, how keen the government is to do a deal, and three, the kinds of issues which they're prepared to be flexible on.
So let's say the DUP's dreams come true and there's a hung parliament, and let's say that you've got the balance of power. Are you seriously suggesting that if you've got Cameron and Miliband on the phone, that because I've read through this manifesto twice now, are you seriously suggesting you're walking into them and you're saying, right, it's parades. We want more rights for orange marches. Seriously. Well,
do you know the thing about that, Stephen, is that I think that the government expects parades to be on the agenda. I mean, don't forget, it was the government who were disappointed in December that the parades issue had not been resolved when the all-party talks took place here. So I think that the government would be very, very surprised if, as part of the menu of things that we have set out, that we hadn't addressed the issue of parades.
Sort it out here. In Northern Ireland with the other political parties rather than expecting Camp Twaddell to be in the Queen's speech.
No, but, well, the government at Westminster has got a role to play in this. And for that reason, I mean, the Parades Commission is something which the government at Westminster has control
of. So you want the government of Westminster to impose will over the heads of other people here?
No, Stephen. They expect the issue to be dealt with. They also understand that they have a role to play in it. That's why they raised it during the storm. Well, because, as I say, there's aspects of this which the government at Westminster has to do things about.
What could they do?
Well, I mean, take, for example, the Parades Commission. The Parades Commission and its future is not in the hands of the Northern Ireland Assembly. The Parades Commission and its future is in the hands of the Westminster Parliament and the Westminster government. The Parades Commission is part of the problem. So therefore, that would be an issue which the government would expect to be in the manifesto.
It's an empty, undeliverable sop to loyalists because your graduated response was such a flop.
It's not.
Where did that ever go?
It's not a sop.
Where did the graduated response go?
It's not a sop to loyalists and a Twaddell. It is a recognition of the reality that parading is still a toxic issue in Northern Ireland, that every summer we hit the headlines because of parading controversies, and that it is an issue. That's why it's in the plan and the manifesto, because it's an issue which needs to be addressed, and it is an issue which the British government recognises it's got a role to play in as well. Of course, the local parties have an important role to play.
There you go. It's never going to impose its will over the local parties here, is it?
Well,
seriously,
it depends what proposal is put forward. It depends what kind of solution is possible. The government has made it quite clear that it is prepared to work with local parties. And of course that means it. And you know, Stephen, the one point you haven't made is that in the plan for Northern Ireland that we have put forward, there are 45 things that we have said we want the government to do, but there are 55 things that we recognise we have responsibility for. So this is not a case of saying, oh, this is all too difficult for us, let's hand it over to the government at Westminster. This is an issue of saying, look, there are things we have to work
together and collectively. From Westminster, legislation on parades.
Well, the legislation on parades will have to come from Westminster. That's the point I'm making. The legislation
before
on
an
parades,
agreement with local parties here. On other democratically elected parties.
Stephen, an agreement has to be reached between parties here in Northern Ireland, but there's also an input for the government at Westminster, because parading legislation is something which has to be dealt with there.
We can't believe a word that's in the manifesto, because you've broken your promises, like the Lib Dems did. It's very clear that the DUP do not stick to their word in their manifesto, because if we look at the last general election manifesto, you promised to end double jobbing. Here's the quote, 2010 DUP election manifesto. Following the Westminster election, successful DUP candidates will step down within weeks from the Northern Ireland Assembly, as early as practically possible.
And most
did you or Gregory Campbell?
No, we didn't. And most,
but, and you
most,
stayed on for 5 years.
Yes, stayed on for 5 years. Funnily enough, even some of those who were complaining about double jobbing, for example, the Belfast Telegraph, were imploring the First Minister at that stage to keep me on as Finance Minister, because don't forget I wasn't only a member of the Assembly, I was also Finance Minister at that stage. So some of those who had led the furore against double jobbing were also recognising...
It was a promise.
That they were also recognising that there was value
in the
double jobbing.
Why do you make a promise and break it?
Well, we said that people would step down, and most of them did step down. There were particular reasons why some of us were kept on.
So you didn't really mean the promise?
We didn't mean the promise. I mean,
We implemented
the promise as far as most of the MPs were concerned. There were particular reasons why that part of the manifesto was not totally fulfilled.
So what parts of the new manifesto are you going to break this time?
Well, it's not a case
of... How can
we
spot that?
It's not what parts are not going to be kept. We kept, by and large, we kept that
by
promise.
By and large, which means...
By and large, we kept that promise.
You broke some of it.
And there were specific reasons. And indeed, but all I'm saying is that there were even people who were opposed to double jobbing who recognised that perhaps the rush to end that was premature, and there were good reasons for it. And you know, I know that my role as Finance Minister and also as a member of Parliament at Westminster, there were significant, because of the contacts which were built at Westminster, there were significant benefits for Northern Ireland, and we negotiated significant benefits for Northern Ireland.
See, Sammy, politics is also about trust, isn't it? And it's about integrity, and it's about honesty. And I do just wonder, when the public reads through a list of promises from the DUP that you will step down within weeks, how and why someone in your party didn't say to you and Gregory Campbell, we have no choice. We made a promise to the public, we can't break our word. You're sitting here today making excuses for why you broke your word. You broke your promise.
I'm not making excuses. I'm telling you that what happened, and I'm also saying that we have defended that position, and we've explained that position. We've explained the circumstances in which that decision was made, and I believe that there were the right circumstances. And as far as, I mean, all I would say to you, as far as the people of East Londonderry and East Antrim are concerned, they re-elected us again at the Assembly election, they recognised the value of having people in that position, and I believe that they'll re-elect us again.
Is there small print in this manifesto, or can we believe all of it?
It wasn't small print, but you know, sometimes circumstances change that lead to some commitments were being made not being fulfilled in full, and that, I suppose that was the important thing. They weren't
Double jobbing continue?
Well, it can't continue because, of course, the law has changed that now.
So, what are you going to do?
And at the end of this session of the Assembly, both Gregory and I have got a decision to make.
What decision are you going to make,
Stephen? I don't think that I'm going to say to you what decision I'm going to make.
You're not sending me; you're sending the public.
Well, I think that the first obligation I would have is to make that position clear to the party. I haven't made my mind up yet.
Really?
And the first obligation would be to the party, and then it will be made public.
So you want to put yourself up for election, but you're not telling people what job you're asking them to elect you for.
They know what job they're electing me for. They're electing me to represent the people of East Antrim, a job which I believe I have done well over the last 10 years.
But you might walk away
years.
Within weeks.
Well, no, it's not a case of might walk away within weeks.
Yes, it is.
At all. Because...
Because that was the old promise.
No, I haven't made a promise to walk away within weeks. I have said...
You did 5 years ago,
I have said that I am standing for election. I am standing for election to the UK Parliament. I hope that we hold the balance of power in that UK Parliament. And I will negotiate as hard as I can for the benefit of the people.
But you might
walk away within weeks.
They might go out with the effort of voting for you, Sammy Wilson, and if they do, you might turn your back on them within weeks because you won't tell them up front.
Well, you see if it did that, Stephen, there would have to be a by-election and they would then be able to make their judgment.
Yeah, but you won't tell them whether you're giving them a commitment or not. Why not?
I am giving them a commitment.
A five-year commitment?
I am giving them a commitment to represent them.
If you're elected,
them.
By the way.
Well, if I'm elected, of course, and I'm being a bit presumptuous there, I agree. but if I'm elected, I'm giving them a commitment that I will act as their public representative.
For how long?
And I will act as their public representative as long as the law allows me to do so.
As long as the law allows you to do so. Well, how long is that?
Well, the law allows me, and I've got to make a choice at
a year,
the end, at the end of the next year as to what I'm going to do. But I'm not going to reveal that choice in this interview with
this
you, Stephen.
It's ridiculous to suggest.
No, it's not ridiculous
this,
to suggest.
That you haven't thought about it.
It is not.
Because that's what you said.
Of course I've thought about
it. Right.
Of course I've thought about it.
But keep it secret until
of course
you get
I've
the
thought
vote.
Of course I've
until
thought about it. But I'm not going to share those thoughts with you.
With your electorate.
The promise I have made to my electorate is that they will see the manifesto I'm standing on. They will look at the record which I have, and I will represent them to the best of my ability, and will continue to do so.
You're going to build a tunnel between here and Scotland.
Well, we're not.
You're going to dig a tunnel.
We're not. We're talking about a feasibility for...
Feasibility study into a tunnel or enclosed bridge across the North Channel from Larne to the Scottish coastline.
Not such a bizarre idea, Stephen, since the BBC were advocating it on stage. It's all part of...
You follow the BBC's lead all of a sudden,
No, I don't, but I'm just saying that it's not such a bizarre idea as you're suggesting. I mean, this is all part of the manifesto which talks about connectivity with the rest of the United Kingdom. And the one thing that we do know is that the transport costs between Northern Ireland and the United Kingdom are extremely high, representing an area where the Port of Larne is situated. I get complaints all the time about the cost of ferries across from Larne to Northern Ireland, in comparison with Dover to Calais, etc. The disruption which bad weather costs and whatnot. It's not actually a new idea.
Would this be a tunnel for cars or for trains?
It was put for... Well, the feasibility study will look at a whole range of things. First of all...
So it's a vague idea.
It is. Well, all visionary ideas start off like that. I mean, the Channel Tunnel started off like that, but has been a roaring success. Boris, HS2...
But you don't know what type of tunnel it is.
HS2, because the feasibility study will show, first of all, the kind of custom you'd have, the cost it would be, what kind of transport is most likely to be...
So you don't know how much it would cost either?
No, we don't. And if the feasibility study...
No idea.
..would indicate that. But, you know...
This is a great shop list for the next Prime Minister. David Cameron, we'll give you our support.
Well, Stephen,
if you back this vague idea where we don't know how much it would cost and we don't know where we want to put a car or a train in there.
Stephen, let's look at the kind of ideas. I mean, this mirrors, for example, the Channel Tunnel. The Channel Tunnel was got the same duration as you're trying to pour on the tunnel. Boris Johnson's idea of a new airport in the Thames Estuary got the same kind of duration.
Show a bit of leadership.
HS2, which the government is now going to spend £35 billion on for high-speed rail through England, got the same kind of duration from when it was first moved.
But show that you've thought this through.
Well, we have.
You haven't.
We have thought it through, and that's the reason why the first stage...
That's the extent of your thinking
because
through.
The first stage of any visionary idea is to first of all say, right, here is what we think would be a good idea. Now let's see how feasible it is. What's it likely to cost? How's it likely to be financed? What would the format of it be? You've just mentioned, would it be rail or would it be road?
With all the cuts to public services, you're seriously suggesting getting billions for a tunnel. That's one of the DUP's manifesto priorities. With all of the cuts that may be implemented in this country and welfare reform and anything else, you're going to build
This is not going to be a call on public finance even within the lifetime of the next Parliament. If you look at the Channel Tunnel was about 20 years in the planning. If you look at HS2, they've been talking about it for the last 10 years in Parliament. If you look at the extension or the extension to hub airports in the south of England, they've been talking about it for 12 years in Parliament.
Right.
So these things tend to be long term.
So we can put that in the long finger and forget about it. It's in the manifesto, but it's gobbledygook. We have
made it quite clear that it's a long term thing. But you know, Stephen, a manifesto should not just be about what you're going to do tomorrow. A manifesto must have some visionary ideas in it, and those visionary ideas tend to be longer term projects. And you just have to accept that you can't decide, let's have a tunnel tomorrow and then get men out with shovels and spades and start digging the next day.
You want fundamental reform of zero-hours contracts. What changes do you want?
Well, I think that the first thing that we want is the end of exclusivity.
That's hardly fundamental change. Stephen Fry is already looking at that.
That is a fundamental change.
No, the minister is already looking to do that.
That is fundamental change because currently a lot of people who are on zero-hour contracts find themselves tied to one person who may or may not give them work, and therefore there's no particular source of income guaranteed.
Are there many exclusivity contracts in Northern Ireland? Because you must have done the research.
Well, we don't know how many exclusivity contracts there are, but we do know that they exist, and we do know that it creates a particular problem.
So you don't know how many. You haven't sought to establish how many, but again, it's in your manifesto.
Stephen, it doesn't matter how many there are. We believe that basically it's unfair. It tends to hurt people who are the most vulnerable in the employment market, and therefore it is an issue which needs to be addressed. And, you know, an issue doesn't have to be on the manifesto because it's a major issue. And it can be on the manifesto because it affects a particular
group. You've described it as fundamental reform.
Well, fundamental reform is changing the nature of the zero-hour contracts. That would be fairly fundamental because, of course, some people and some employers want to have people on tap and people on tap exclusively, yeah. And it's an issue which we believe needs to be addressed.
It's loaded language, isn't it? To listen to you this morning, it might be a minor tweak. You call it fundamental reform.
Well, I would imagine for the people who find themselves in these kind of contracts and who can't actually go and look for work elsewhere, it wouldn't be a minor tweak. It would be regarded as fairly important.
So is your party colleague Alistair Ross out of step when he describes zero-hour contracts as a lifeline to small businesses in Northern Ireland?
No, he's not, because we're not saying we should ban zero-hour contracts. What we're saying is that zero-hour contracts need to be... Well, zero-hour contracts do suit some employees and they do suit some employers. Where the nature of the demand for their product, etc., and indeed for some people who have got other commitments and don't want to have full-time hours. So it works for both for employers and employees. It does give flexibility, but there should be some certain safeguards in it.
What do you think some of your image is like across the water if Cameron or Miliband was going to do a deal with you? Do you think they see you as a mature party? Do you think they see you as a homophobic party?
Well, I think at the end of the day, Cameron and Miliband will look at the numbers game in Parliament and will be prepared to do a deal with us if they believe that that deal is affordable and that deal will give them the benefits which they require, namely to have sufficient votes in Parliament for key issues.
It's about, isn't it? It's about reputation and it's about those major, major statesmen being able to be seen to be doing a deal with a party like yours.